listening to a podcast on the Black Fur Network.
Episode 50, O.J. Simpson, Part 1. On the evening of the 12th of June 1994, at a rental home in Brentwood, California, Nicole Brown Simpson, ex-wife of former NFL star O.J. Simpson, is found brutally murdered. Another body at the scene is identified as Ron Goldman, a waiter from the Mezzaluna restaurant where Nicole and her family had dined that evening. O.J. Simpson is located in Chicago and informed of her death and returns to L.A., where he is arrested and questioned by police. And now we'll discuss crimes like these. Hello and welcome to Crimes Like These with me, SJ.
Me, Paul.
And me, Sam.
Happy 2024. Good evening.
Hi. Hi. Is it 2024 already?
It is, yes.
Oh, God.
I know.
It has arrived.
I know, it's already been quite the year so far.
It feels like it should be Christmas again.
You love Christmas, Paul.
I do,
you
not after Christmas. I'm the most Christmassy person in the world from about the 25th of November until the 25th of December.
Oh, and after that, you like cold turkey.
By about 11 o'clock in the morning,
really?
I'm fucking done with Christmas, yeah.
Even before your dinner and everything.
I mean, by the time the dinner comes around, I'm already thinking.
Oh, that's my favourite bit of Christmas.
I know,
the
food.
Same.
And then that's it for me. Like Christmas decorations come down Boxing Day, and it's all back to normal.
Yeah. I do get that though. Like I do.
Yeah.
Get the Christmas decoration, wanting to be done with them. Like, yep, it's done, it's gone.
Yeah, I get that. And how are we?
Is long enough.
How have we been? What have we been doing this very, very Baltic January that we're having as well?
Have you got snow up there?
Yeah. No, but it's been -5.
Yeah, same, yeah.
Yeah. No snow yet, though.
Thank God.
Yeah. My handbrake froze on again last night, so that was fun this morning.
Oh, shit.
Oh, my God. Yeah, how'd you get that to work again?
Well, I have to aim the heaters at the floor. Turn them up full blast, pump the handbrake up and down for ages, and then eventually just drive until they release.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Holy
it started up in
shit.
Last year. And then, it's a pain in the ass. So now I've got my car on chocks and not, like, without the handbrake on the driveway.
Oh, wow. That's insane. No way.
I've never even heard of a handbrake freezing before.
No, I was going to say, I wouldn't have even thought of that.
Me either.
Because
I took it to the garage the first time it happened, obviously, because I thought the handbrake was stuck on.
Yeah.
And he said, he said it's -10 degrees out there. He said it's frozen on.
Fucking hell.
Holy shit.
Holy shit.
Oh, God.
It's not as if you can just go and pour boiling water on it either.
No, not under there, no.
Not under there, no. Fuck. Jesus.
Wow.
So we're having fun with cars in the...
Fun with cars. Sounds like another podcast.
No.
What have you been watching? Anything new?
True Detective.
Oh, Saltburn's so good.
Saltburn.
Let's go.
I love it that you got so excited about True Detective and then remembered Saltburn. You was like, oh, that's Saltburn's amazing.
Sam said Saltburn.
It's because obviously it was before Christmas, weren't it? And we've had a bit of a break, but I've watched loads of things since our last podcast. But Saltburn is like,
it's up there.
Of my brain.
Yeah, it's
fucking amazing, amazing. Film. And I would like to just say to our many, 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 many listeners, obviously, because we're mega famous, that yes, Barry Keoghan is fucking awesome in it. I'm getting a lot of recognition and rightfully so, but I do feel like the other cast members aren't getting as much recognition as what they should be because Barry was so good. Yeah, right, they're fair enough, but like the others were also all fucking
incredible.
Amazing. The whole thing was cast so well.
That always happens though, don't it?
Rosamund Pike. He plays that kind of
she's
character.
She's so good in that. Well, she's good in everything. But
fucking well. Yeah.
Brilliant, brilliant character.
And the sister, that I don't know her name, but the girl who played Venetia.
Classic.
That and whole bath scene, her monologue in the bath.
Yeah, really good. That was like probably my favourite bit throughout the whole of the film. And that was what she delivered.
Yeah.
But also, is his name Jay? Oh, I'm so non-shitting. Jacob. He plays that part so effortlessly and also done the accent so well.
I was just going to say his
really,
accent.
Yeah,
was
it's not really easy for Americans good. To do English. Like, and he done the accent so well. Australian.
He's Australian, yeah.
Yeah.
Which I didn't know until I saw interviews and I was like, oh my God, I thought he was American.
Yeah, I forgot. I think because I know him from.
I get that
Euphoria.
Accent.
Yes. He's in Euphoria. That's how I know him. Yeah.
I only found out recently Michael Fassbender's Irish.
Yeah, I did know he's
Irish.
He's
super Irish.
I thought he's American.
He was Irish.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, the whole cast amazing.
Yep. Amazing. And what a soundtrack.
Soundtrack.
And it's just what a soundtrack. Yep.
Just generally, just the setting, everything. It's just such a good film.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's so clever. Like, the writing, the script and everything about it is it's really clever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just quickly, spoiler in 3, 2, 1. Not a major spoiler, really, but I just want to say, fucking did not see the twist coming at all.
I kind of did, because as soon as Felix turned up dead, I was like, he did it.
But up until that point, never even saw a twist coming.
No, did you not?
Nope.
I knew something was going to happen, but I couldn't figure out what. It was giving me very, Talented Mr. Ripley vibes. Like, that's the I was getting that same vibe, and I was like, there's something dodgy is going to happen in a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think when his demeanour changed, like when he's talking to Rosamund Pike outside, when he turns up really early and he tells her that she's so fucking beautiful. Yeah. And the confidence that he had was just the polar opposite to what you'd seen him before. And you're like, hold on a second.
Yeah.
What the fuck's going on? He was so great.
With her on the patio. When they had,
yes.
Yeah, yeah.
When she's talking about she was a lesbian once.
Her lines are my favourite lines. And
she
like
fucking killed me.
Just the whole thing. Like, that. It's so accurate to that type of person, though. That is the kind of thing that they would say. And it's like that, like, old money, clueless, sort of, like, only ever lived that lifetime kind of vibe.
And Carey Mulligan as well. Little part that she was in, she fucking nailed it. Which she's like, look at me, I've got goosebumps. And she's like, oh no.
I know.
It's like,
the tone of the film was amazing. It like, just because one minute it was sort of a comedy, and the next it was dark as fuck. And then it was like kind of a romance thing. And it was like, what the hell?
Yeah.
But it was all like, fitted together.
It worked so well.
It just worked. And it's just an incredible film. Incredible film.
It was,
It definitely was one of those films where I was thinking about it for days afterwards.
Oh, same. Yeah. Same. I want to watch it again because there's blatantly things like little nuances.
There's loads. It's on Prime.
Prime.
There's so much like foreshadowing and hidden messages because it's all about a Greek tragedy.
That's it. Yeah, exactly.
It's going to play well into
Greek tragedy.
And me, I do as well, yeah. Yeah. Oh, just
loved it.
10 out of 10. Indeed. I've been endeavouring to watch as many new films that I say new films. I just mean first watches, so not necessarily new. I watched The Creator the other day.
Oh, so good.
Don't know this one.
Loved that film.
I had a little cry. I had to have a little cry because it really upset me at the end. I was just like, oh, that's really fucking sad. Really sad. It's so stunning. Just absolutely
I saw it in IMAX.
Stunning.
It was fucking
did
ya? Yeah. Luckily, my local Odeon has an IMAX.
Oh, I bet that was amazing. Yeah, it's just, I love anything pretty much that Gareth Edwards does anyway. Yep. But yeah, The Creator is really, really good. It's kind of like Blade Runner-y
because it was originally a Star Wars movie.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. He adapted it.
Okay.
Disney didn't want to make it, so he just adapted it, made it himself. Well, not himself, obviously,
that
but
makes,
made it.
That makes a lot of sense.
Not a Star Wars film.
Yeah. 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 Amazing. Yeah, I really enjoyed the creator. There's a couple of other films that have been on my watch list for just ages and ages and ages, and I thought, I just sort of, I used that app called Just Watch to find out if streaming anywhere. There was two on iPlayer that I was, actually, there's three on iPlayer, but I haven't watched one yet. There was two on iPlayer that I watched in the same day. I watched Crazy Rich Asians.
Okay.
It's so fucking good. I was not expecting it to be as good as it was.
Fair enough.
It's so fucking good. So good. I was just like watching it going, this film is fucking hilarious.
It's nuts as well. It's fucking nuts.
It is mental. It is mental. Yeah, Crazy Rich Asians. It's on iPlayer. Really, really well worth a watch. Really good. The other one is probably a lesser known film. It's called Shiva Baby. And it's about a Jewish girl who the film starts and she's basically having sex with her sugar daddy, and she's getting ready to go out and meet her family, and she's like, I've got a thing to go to with my family, blah blah blah, goes to her family, and it's like hardcore Jewish community, and they're going to a relative's wake. And you find out through her sort of going around this wake and talking to people that she's basically been lying to them, that she's going to college and she's doing this and she's doing law and this, and you can see she's getting really uncomfortable with all these questions, and they're talking about how skinny she is and she needs to eat, and they're just like, all her, not just her parents but all her family, are just like so overbearing on her. After a few minutes she sort of walks around this house and goes into this room, and her sugar daddy is there with his wife and child.
Oh dear.
I highly recommend watching it. It's on iPlayer and it's called Shiva Baby. It's so fucking good. Okay. There's some moments where it was either kind of like Saltburn in a way, completely hilarious, or so tense that I was like, oh my god, what's gonna happen.
Cool.
But yeah, really, really good. Really good. And the girl who plays the main girl, I forget her name, but she's absolutely brilliant. She's been in other things as well. And I can't think of, for the life of me, what else, because I did look her up and I was like, oh, that's her. It's Rachel Sennett. That's her name. She was in Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. That's what she was in. That's what the other thing that I've seen her in.
Okay.
But yeah.
Oh, that's good. I liked Bodies, Bodies, Bodies.
Yeah, it was okay.
Oh, yeah, I know her.
I only really watched it for Pete Davidson.
So. Did you see Thanksgiving yet?
No, I haven't seen that yet. No, I've got quite a few on my list to watch. But yeah, those are the highlights of what I've watched so far. Anyway,
excellent.
Good. Yeah. Well, what about everybody else? Any highlights? TV?
Loads. I'd be here all day if I talked about the films. I saw Wrath of Man last night. Fucking well.
What is that?
It's Guy Ritchie directed Jason Statham film.
Oh.
Oh my god, it's so good. It's not a typical Jason Statham film.
You don't like the
Statham.
You don't
really?
Oh, I don't. I think we've been through this before, haven't we?
We have.
Yeah. I'm on a Statham tear at the minute. I've watched everything. Loads.
I love him. He just owns what he does, really. Yep. And
every
I'm
one of his films is
that.
Exactly the same.
Yeah. I think the only thing that I actually like him in. In fact, I can't remember. He's in Lock, Stock, isn't he?
Yeah.
I think Lock, Stock is the only
breakout
thing.
Role. Wasn't
yeah,
it?
Was
it
his breakout? Early, wasn't it? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he was an Olympic diver.
What?
No.
Yeah, Jason Statham was an Olympian. Yeah, Olympic diver.
Oh wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, impressive.
Yeah. Yeah,
he does all his own stunts too, but doesn't get any credit like Tom Cruise does.
It's just because Tom Cruise all that just constantly shit that mentions goes on. It.
What?
Yeah, true. Yeah, Jason Statham does all his own stunts. Like, all that crazy shit you see happening in his films, that's actually him.
Adrenaline junkie.
Yeah, he's a dude.
Yeah.
And I like the fact that he knows what he is. You know, he's not trying to be a Shakespearean actor. Just
he's just
films.
leaning into it.
Just leans into it.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what I've been doing.
Go on, DIY. I've
been watching a documentary about OJ Simpson.
Have you? Why have you been doing that?
Well.
It's episode 50, which is a bit of a milestone, and it was my choice. And I thought we'd kick off the year with an absolute monster of a case and do OJ Simpson. So this episode, yeah, the juice. Anytime anybody says that, though, all I can think of is I was going to call him Ross Geller then. That's not his name. David Schwimmer in the fucking TV show.
AKA the best character in Friends.
All I can hear is David Schwimmer saying juice constantly. Because he said it so much in that TV show that it just became comical. But yeah. This episode and the next episode, which will be 51, we will be covering OJ Simpson. Big deep breath.
Deep breath. Yep.
Dive in.
Here we go.
So, OJ Simpson or Orenthal James Simpson. Orenthal. Yeah.
Apparently, he's auntie.
No, I didn't even know that's what it.
They were saying it in the documentary a lot. And there was a clip where he was on a talk show.
Yeah.
And he seemed embarrassed by it. Like the
really?
The host said to him, like, oh, what does the OJ stand for? And he said, oh, Orenthal. And he was like, oh, Orenthal. Oh, yeah. But yeah, just call me OJ. I'm OJ.
I wonder if it's kind of like his image, because like he was known as the juice and all that. It was kind of like his persona and everything, and like with calling brand, him by his real name.
He branded himself, didn't he?
He did.
Yeah. He had a specific way he wanted to be seen. So yeah, I can see that.
But I mean, initially, I'm just gonna put this in right now because it's gonna come up a lot, I think. OJ Simpson was clearly a narcissist.
Absolutely.
100%.
Absolutely.
Oh yeah.
Utterly obsessed with himself. He was the only person that existed on the planet. Like no one else mattered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that was the product of being told you that from a young age.
Yeah,
you think?
Yeah,
think
because he was so good at football. Like he was the coaches, everyone was up his ass from like day one, pretty much.
Yeah. So OJ was born 9th of July 1947 in San Francisco, California. He was one of four children. He had a brother and two sisters. And his parents were Eunice and Jimmy Lee. His dad was interesting. Let's talk about his dad for a second. I don't quite know where to start. But yeah. let's just dive in. His father was a very well-known drag queen.
Yeah.
In the San Francisco Bay Area, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Openly gay.
Openly gay, yeah. Unfortunately, in 1986, he did die of AIDS. Very sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I did not know that before I started this research. Nope.
Me either.
Nor me.
I didn't know a lot. I didn't know most of this, to be honest with you. I think it's one of those cases where it's so like in the public eye. It's so in there. Yeah. Like you kind of thought you knew about it, but I actually didn't, as it turns out.
Yeah, you don't know the nitty gritty detail because all you're being fed by, you know, the big sensational stories is the gossip, the most interesting things that are going to sell newspapers and, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. Money.
Yeah.
Dark, what's it?
What?
I can't remember now. It's something, there's a saying. Oh, if it bleeds, it leads.
If it bleeds, it leads. I like that. Yeah, because that's the Nightcrawler thing. Yeah. I remember. So let's talk a little bit about OJ's childhood. So when he was 2 years old, he contracted rickets. Unfortunately, very sad. I can't imagine it's Yeah, I was going to say he grew. Yeah, it's 47, so yeah, I would imagine it was it was pretty common in those days,
especially in low income households because they weren't getting the vitamin they needed. And
yeah, that's it. Yeah, so it left him pigeon toed and bow legged. He had to wear a pair of shoes that were connected by an iron bar for a few hours almost every day until he was 5 years old. That must have been quite traumatic for him as a child.
Yeah.
At such a young age. That's,
yeah.
I know it's
you
only a
be
few
doing
hours
what everyone
a day,
else is
but
doing.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know that you're different and not. Yeah. You don't want to stand out for something like that, do you?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm actually surprised he ended up quite extroverted because of that. Because something like that usually would make you more introverted because you just want to avoid.
He was kind of a weird mix of introvert and extrovert, though.
Yeah,
because you see him on a lot of like public appearances, specifically talk shows and things where he had to be himself.
Mm.
He was very reserved. He came off as very sort of, I don't know, like bashful in a way. Or
Maybe this is where the persona comes into it, though. It's like alter ego in a way, and that's where he can like be the extrovert because that's what he wants to be seen as. Mm-hmm. But then he's like true self. You might be right. Might be more introverted and a bit more reserved because of things like having had rickets, etc.
Maybe. Mm-hmm. At the age of 13, he joined a gang called the Persian Warriors.
Mm.
You know, as you do. So basically, he grew up in the projects, basically in the projects neighborhood of San Francisco, which is quite common for African American kids and families and things like that. One fight did land him in the San Francisco Youth Guidance Center for nearly a week in 1962. It must have been pretty bad for him to end up in a center, really.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think they were too shy about looking up black kids, though.
No, true.
So it could have been a punch in the face.
Yeah. Yeah, it could have been, yeah. Yeah, I couldn't find any further detail on it as to what exactly happened to land him there, but yeah. But this is when it all changed for OJ because one of the volunteers at the center, I think he was friends with Willie Mays, who was a baseball player, I think. And he arranged Willie Mays to visit OJ, and he didn't even give him a talking to. It wasn't one of those, you know, situations where he sort of sat him down and was like, stay in school, don't do drugs and all this. He didn't do that with him. He just kind of like hung out with him. And OJ obviously idolized Willie Mays at the time.
Well, a lot of people did. Yeah, he was
huge. A lot of people did. Yeah, he was, yeah. So didn't give him a speech or anything. He basically spent an afternoon and the following part of the following day with him. And this encouraged OJ to basically get him more involved in football, basically.
Yeah.
And this is where it all turns around. So OJ was 15 in 1962, so quite an impressionable age.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously it was probably the right time for that kind of impression to be made as well.
Yeah.
While he's not a kid, but he's not quite an adult yet, I guess. So I think that was, it's a significant turning point for him. So Simpson played football in Galileo High School in San Francisco. So he first played as a tackle and then as a fullback. I don't know anything about American football. I have no idea what any of that means. But I mean,
there's a quarterback.
Yeah, I mean that's the quarterback. I don't know any other terminology.
Watch the quarterback documentary that's on Netflix. It's like a 6 or 7 part.
Oh,
and it follows like 3 NFL quarterbacks through the season, and it was bloody brilliant. I really enjoyed watching it.
Oh, really? They love the sport though, don't they? Oh, America.
Yeah, they live for it, yeah.
I recently discovered pickleball.
Oh, that rings a
bell. I've heard of this.
What is that?
I had never heard of it in my entire life. It's kind of like tennis for kids, but it's adults playing. So it's like it's almost like a soft ball with like big, thick, like plastic rackets. They're not strings though. Oh, they're like solid plastic.
Yeah, I know the ones.
I was like, what the fucking hell is pickleball?
It sounds a lot more fun than its description, to be fair. Like, just the knife sounds
good. Yeah, it's kind of like tennis, but on a smaller court, yeah, basically. Yeah. But yeah.
I mean, we do live in a world where extreme ironing's a sport, so.
Oh, wow. That would not.
Is it a recognised sport?
Yeah.
Is it really?
Yeah.
No, it isn't, Paul.
I promise you, there's leagues and everything.
Okay.
I'm going to have to just give this a quick Google.
Prepare to be amazed. This is good podcast content.
Oh, my God. There's people skydiving, doing the ironing.
They do it hanging off cliffs and all sorts of weird
shit. There's a guy paddleboarding.
Yeah. That's less extreme.
And how do you win? But you can just iron a shirt whilst in the sky?
Well, you've got to just iron the shirt the best in the weirdest place.
Are you being serious? That's what it is.
That's actually what it is, yeah.
And someone judges it and they're like, you've ironed the collar the best on this shirt. You get first place.
Even madder than that. We've gone right off track. I'm really sorry.
Already.
Have you seen the thing where they do the hobby horse show jumping thing?
No.
Oh,
can't be a
hell.
Thing.
You want to laugh? Google that. Oh. Hobby horse show jumping.
Google along at home, everybody.
It's crazy. It's
and then delete your Google history.
Hobby horse.
I could watch those videos for hours on end.
It's not recognised as an official sport.
I'm sorry.
I recognise it as an official sport.
Oh, my God.
That's not... No.
No.
I don't like to criticize other people's hobbies, but that's embarrassing.
Yeah.
Wow.
And they cry and stuff when they win. They get on the podium and they're crying.
No.
Yeah, it's insane. Yeah. I'm sorry if any of the listeners do competitive hobby horsing.
Wow. I mean, I'm still on extreme ironing at the moment. Just I can't.
You can get t-shirts and everything.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about OJ's career.
Let's talk about OJ, yeah.
So OJ attended San Francisco City College from 65 to 66. He achieved a pretty good record, which allowed him to play at the University of Southern California, where he set multiple team records for yards gained by rushing, whatever that is. In 1967 was 1,415 yards, and 1968 was 1,709 yards.
He was fast as fuck.
He was just
winning.
Fast.
He was
as it turns out, he was only fast.
Yeah. Yeah.
For his size, though, he was really
couldn't catch
nimble.
A ball.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, well.
I mean, you know.
He doesn't need to when he's really quick, I suppose.
Well, yeah, he doesn't need to, does he?
Exactly. He just has to
quarterbacks for.
Exactly, that's it. As long as he's got the ball, then you're going to want the fast person to have it, aren't you? Because they're going to be the one to get to that line quicker. I'm
oh, man, all the other American listeners are thinking,
screaming at us.
Yeah.
Screaming.
But he was very fast. And for his size, he was really nimble.
He was, yeah, he was. And he's a big guy. He's 6 foot. And he was
6'2".
Was he 6'2"?
280 pounds.
Ooh, massive.
Jesus.
Massive.
That's, I mean, if he runs into you, you're going to know about it. Jesus.
Oh, yeah.
So in 1967 to 1968, he was named All-American, whatever that means. Again, I've no idea. He played in 2 Rose Bowl games and won the Heisman Trophy as best player of the season. That was 1968. He was also, this was his time at USC. He was also a member of a world record setting 440-yard relay team as well. Mm. OJ was the number one draft choice of the American Football League, which it used to be the AFL, and that was for the Buffalo Bills, which are based out of Buffalo, Niagara Falls, which was in 1969. And then the AFL basically merged with the NFL, which is what is known today as the National Football League, and that was in 1970. His contract, interestingly enough, with the NFL was at that time, so this is 1970, was worth $650,000. Would you like to know what that money is today?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
$6.5 million.
Wow. And actually, compared to today's players, that's pocket change.
I know. That's exactly what I thought as I converted it. I was like, that's like low compared to today.
They get
like
an insane amount of money.
Yeah.
But and not that's at the not including level.
Not at the not at college level, no, but that doesn't include like sponsorships and like brand deals and things like that.
And everything else they can do,
And everything else, yeah. OJ was traded in 1978 to the San Francisco 49ers, and he retired after that season in 1979. He was also inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1985.
Yeah. He also held a record. I don't know if he still does or not, because obviously don't follow American football, but at one point he held the record for most yards gained, and it was over 2,000.
Yeah.
In professional, like in the NFL.
NFL, wasn't it? Yeah. So, I mean, that's obviously quite impressive for, you know, not all kids are going to be given A, that opportunity, or B, that dedicated either at that age.
He was around this time as well. He seemed to be a good guy too, because while he was getting all the attention, he was not like shirking his players. Like there was one instance where they won some big game, I don't know what it was, and the press wanted him in the room to interview him, and he wouldn't do it unless the rest of the team went in as well. And they were all in this little room, all stood around,
and he went through them all, didn't he, as well? Like he literally was like, this is so and so, you know, and it really good.
It was a real really team player,
cool, like, team player.
That sounds so wholesome, doesn't it?
He felt wholesome, honestly. You watch interviews with him back then and things like that, and he was so humble and wholesome. Yeah, like that is exactly what it is.
Strange.
What the fuck happened?
We'll get to that. We'll get to that.
CTE, I suspect, is involved there.
Yeah. So he retired from football, and he became a film and television actor and a sports commentator.
Incidentally, did you know that he retired that early? I didn't. I assumed he was playing like in the 90s and stuff.
I assumed he was 90s as well. Yeah. I didn't. He was still playing.
Knowing from his acting, though, I only knew him from like being a sportsman. So when I found out the acting stuff, I was like, really surprised.
Well, I knew he was in Naked Gun, but that's all I knew, and I assumed it was just a, you know, like these days,
cameo,
a
bit
like a UFC player and a fighter in a film or whatever.
I looked him up on IMDb, and he did a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
I mean, a lot of it wasn't very good, I assume, by the ratings, but you know, Naked Gun, he was in. I think he was in all three movies. Wasn't
he was. Yeah.
Yeah.
Classics.
Yeah.
Well, the first one.
Yeah. Fair. He did a load of print ads. He also did TV commercials. One of his biggest brands that he worked with was the Hertz Rental Car Company. Yeah. He did stuff for them between 1976 and 1980. He also did an orange juice commercial some sort of soft drink like
RC
Cola, that's it, thank you. He did that. He was in, I think his first film was in 1974, which is an exploitation flick called The Klansman, I think it was. That was his first big role, I think. But yeah, as we mentioned, he went on to be in Naked Gun, which came out in 1988.
Yeah, he was also had a lot of businesses. You mentioned Hertz. Yeah, he had business interests within Hertz, so he had like a lot of shares. He owned three Ramada Inn hotels. And some sort of ham company.
I was going to say, really like a honey ham or
honey
something.
Honey ham company. Yeah.
Yeah,
he was a businessman. Yeah.
He literally, what he put his mind to, he had a vision, he had a goal. And to be fair to him, what he put his mind to, he always got. Because I think even when he wanted to go into like movies and TV, and it was like, oh, here we go. Yeah. But he'd done it, and he was in a fair few of them, and it weren't horrendous.
No, that's an athlete's mindset, that is.
Tears,
I do like whenever... that mindset though. Like, I do wish I had that mindset a little bit more. I run out of steam sort of like three quarters of the way there half a time, and I'm like, do you know what? But like, you just need that last little bit, don't you? And then that's what you achieve.
It's kind of like Olympian mentality, isn't it? Like, will like push themselves to the extreme.
All professional athletes are always successful after they retire, and so are special forces operatives. When they come out of the special forces,
they go into like contracting and stuff like that, don't they? Yeah, they build their own businesses.
They always succeed. Yeah, it's that mindset. They won't quit. They can't quit.
Yeah,
discipline.
Yeah, discipline. Yeah, it's the word. Yeah. Shall we talk about wives and partners?
Yeah, I didn't delve too deeply into this, to be honest with you.
I dabbled. OJ's first wife was Marguerite Whitley. They began dating in 1965 and they married in June 1967.
Love the proposal.
What was the proposal?
I didn't love their proposal. I mean, he loved a proposal.
Yes, he did.
I imagine it was pretty humble back then, to be fair, because it was like he's didn't they meet at like college or something? It was a very young relationship, wasn't it?
Yes,
so it was the done thing back then.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it's
half the time it was an agreement like back then, weren't it? Like, you didn't do the big proposal thing. You do know it was like
discussion. Like, shall we?
We should get married, and then you're engaged, and then you've
got to ask the father's permission and all that.
Yeah. Whereas now it's like a big event, isn't it?
Yeah.
Not the way I did it.
I want to know, but you can tell us.
I just it was cliche. I did it Christmas morning.
Oh.
And I pretended when she'd opened all her presents up, I went, "Oh, I've got one more. I found one more here." And I'd wrap the ring up and I pulled it out and went, "Meh." It was on her finger and she was crying before she even said yes.
Oh, that's lovely.
That's cute. Right. I like that. So, OJ and Marguerite have three children. So they have Arnell, who was born in 1968, Jason, who was born in 1970, and Aaron, who was born in 1977, I think. 76 or 77. I got two different years.
Yeah.
Sadly, Aaron Simpson, who was the last child to be born, she died tragically in the swimming pool at the family home just before she was 2 years old.
That's horrendous.
Yeah.
That is it, like, where his mind, that kind of mindset that he has, is very interesting though, because I mean, he wasn't really that present for his kids anyway, and he wasn't a very good husband really, because he was so focused on his goals outside of his family. But
the
then also
he did fail on being a husband, just generally.
Yeah, exactly, that's it. Yeah, because I suppose he's ticked it off, hasn't he? And it's like, it's not something, he hasn't got a, there's not another stage, whereas his career is like, right, I've done this, on to the next stage. It's like you said, it's that won't quit type mentality. But losing a child, I know, obviously, you know, that happened.
That must have been horrific.
It would kill me. I would not be able to go on. I know I wouldn't. It would absolutely destroy me. So I don't know whether it, it's a good thing he had that mindset because he was able to sort of carry on in a way. But in anything I sort of saw, he didn't really go too much into it. It was like something that happened to him and he compartmentalized it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying it didn't affect him because I don't want to say that because I don't think that's a fair thing to say. But just I think from what I was reading and seeing, it was mm-hmm. just like he was like, right, this has happened. I'm going to put it in this box and
yeah.
focus on this, this and this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's about it. They divorced in 1979. So obviously the same year that Aaron died. So there was I can't imagine that. What, 79?
Yeah.
Same year Alien came out. Amazing. Yeah.
What a year.
Paul's born, Alien comes out. Amazing.
When Alien came out, I put a distinct downer on it.
In later interviews, I think she did say that that the marriage was troubled and that OJ was abusive towards her.
Also having rampant affairs.
I was going to say, yeah. Lots of infidelity there. And next came Nicole Brown. So, Nicole was born May 1959, and she was only 18 when she first met OJ, and he was 30.
Yeah, didn't like that. Well, yeah, that guy didn't either.
And she was working as a waitress at a Beverly Hills private club, which was the Daisy. That kind of power dynamic as well, you know, with him being so famous and so, you know, wealthy at that time, she's in quite a vulnerable position or impressionable position as well, not just because of her age, but I guess the job that she does, she's, you know,
he's
gonna be swept off her feet kind of thing, isn't she?
Because I think he's gonna be able to spoil her however, and she's gonna
it's love bombing. I think he just love bombed her, didn't he?
Yeah. But there was some massive red flags in, like, pretty much immediately the moment they started like dating. He was already showing signs of being an abusive, controlling, aggressive person. Mm-hmm. But she knew it, and she even told people about it. But she was like, "It's fine. I love him."
He was charming too.
He was very charming. Yeah, very charming.
Another classic narcissist trait.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So Simpson and Brown got married in February 1985. They weren't together that long before they got married, really.
Yeah.
Let's not dive into more of Nicole. We'll get to that later, because there was one more person, which was Christy Prode, who he dated from 1995 to 2008. She is quite the character.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't she? Yes.
She's quite the character. I mean, give her a bit of a Google, folks. There's a lot there. There's reports of her stealing prescription pills from elderly people and all kinds of things. I mean, that's quite a long time that she stayed with him, really. They didn't I don't think they got married though, did they? No, she's not listed as a spouse. And they didn't have any children either.
No.
So let's talk about New Year's Day in 1989. Oof, indeed. So this is a 911 call from Nicole at 3:30 in the morning. And incidentally, this is the ninth response to a domestic disturbance report from the mansion where they lived in Brentwood,
OJ had the police wrap around his finger.
I think he did.
He had him over to the house and like,
yeah,
he would chat him up.
He was very clever with like who he made close friends very with clever. And who, because he was so charming and so likable, and people wanted to be around him. He was able to do that quite easily, but he did it in such influential areas like that would benefit his life. He wasn't fucking stupid by any means.
Definitely not stupid, no.
I think he took full advantage of the situation and his position of power, and money equals power. So he had that. And nobody wants to believe that, you know, your sporting hero is that kind of person either. Yeah. You're always you're gonna want to say, you know, oh, you know, I want to hear both sides of the story kind of thing. I don't believe that of him. I've never seen anything. But unless you know that person personally in their day-to-day life.
Exactly.
You know,
You'd never know. Especially because people like that are they're clever about hiding, like, what they do. It's like women abusers tend to only hit in the body, like below the neck. Yeah. So there's like no visible bruising or anything like that.
Yep.
So yeah, they are smart in the way they do things.
Absolutely.
But he was at this time, he was getting a lot of stick for not standing up for the black community.
Yeah.
Because the Watts riots and things had been happening, and the Rodney King.
Rodney King. Yeah, that's it.
And he wouldn't say anything publicly or like make a stand against it, like everybody else was doing.
Yeah.
And it was almost like, and this is not my words, this is from the documentary I watched, a lot of black people felt like he turned his back on the community he came from.
Because it didn't serve him, though, did it? It didn't serve his purpose and his vision. Like, he was like, I'm not anything that's, or stand up for, say anything that's going to jeopardise what I want, which was, like, money, fame, recognition. And he just was on that trajectory, wasn't he?
So, 911 call, January 1st, 1989, 3:30 a.m. So, I don't know whether you listened to the 911 call.
Yeah.
Interesting. So, she's saying that he's going to kill her. And you can hear him banging on the door and screaming obscenities and all kinds of things. She's, you know, clearly shaken and crying and whatnot. When the police get there, they see her run out of some bushes.
Yeah, she's muddy and wet.
Yeah, she's scratched up as well. So Simpson had punched and kicked her, pulled her hair, and screamed that he was going to kill her, basically.
Yeah, that's exactly what she said. Yeah, he's going to kill me.
Yeah. And she also said to the police that you never do anything about him. You talk to him and then you leave.
Yeah.
So this is, as I say, this is the 9th domestic disturbance report. I don't know in what time period, but this is the 9th report to the house. 4 months later, Simpson pleads no contest to spousal battery charges. This is interesting as well. So the judge, which was Ronald Schoenberg, overruled the prosecutor's request that he serve a month in jail because of the severity of the beating. And that he undergoes an intensive year-long treatment program for men who batter their wives.
Yeah, he also did community service, remember?
He did do community service, but
hang on.
I'll let you cover that bit. I'm just gonna go over the facts. So instead, the court documents and the interviews with the prosecutors said that Simpson was receiving no jail time. He was allowed to pick his own psychiatrist and receive counselling over the phone. So he didn't need to show up in person, etc. And obviously the prosecutors were like, this is fucking ridiculous. How is he even allowed to do this? This is unheard of. It's unprecedented.
Yeah.
He was finally sentenced to 120 hours of community service and 2 years probation. The judge also fined him $200 and ordered him to give $500 to a shelter for battered women. $500 I mean, what is that to him at this point?
Nothing, is it? It's just change in his pocket, isn't it?
Absolutely nothing.
Do you want to know what he did for his community service?
Tell us, Paul.
So, for his punishment, for his community service, what he did was he spent all of that time at his golf club that he was a member of, organising a celebrity charity golf match.
Incredible. Game,
whatever.
And that was just okay. Yeah. And the thing is, because they just let him get away with it, he's like, he's basically feeling completely untouchable. It's like even the consequences he's given, and they're not consequences.
No, they're not.
And he's just like, I'm God. I can do what I want.
At that time in America, there were no consequences for celebrities at all.
Mm.
I mean, look at Vince Neil. Killed a dude.
Who's Vince Neil?
Motley Crue.
Oh, God, yeah, fuck yeah. Forgot killed a guy. That. Yeah, killed somebody. Yeah.
Matthew Broderick killed a guy.
Yeah. Oh, that was the car wreck, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Was that the car? Yeah, it was the car wreck, wasn't it? Yeah.
Driving on the wrong side of the road. There's been loads of incidents.
Yeah.
It's mad, really, that is.
And we all know Natalie Wood disappeared. We all know who was on the boat.
We all know who was on the fucking boat,
Yep.
Yeah, Hollywood, America, celebrity, very different place back then.
Yeah, I wouldn't like to be in any era or decade. I don't think I'd like to be a part of Hollywood.
Me either. Not even in this one, where they are actually held accountable.
I know.
For the most part.
But it's gone like the other way now, because every single thing is scrutinized, isn't it? You know, it's gone completely the other way. It has. Incidentally, still in 1989, so this is in the July, OJ is named NBC football analyst. So he basically becomes a pundit on a football show because, you know, that's what happens when, you know, you've beaten the shit out of your wife.
Yeah.
And the photographs of her face and that, like,
oh, Jesus.
So bad.
Like, it's not like there wasn't any evidence. It's not like he just slapped her a bit.
I was going to say,
she documented even times before, didn't she? Yeah. There was photos knocking about and like diary entries and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, she recorded every time it happened in some way.
Yeah, she did. So the beating left Nicole with a cut lip, a swollen and blackened left eye and cheek, and a handprint on her neck. That was according to the police report.
That must be terrifying. Like I said, he's a big bloke. Like that. That must be terrifying.
Incredible.
Yeah. I mean, she's effectively defenseless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Against someone of that sort of size and strength.
Yeah.
Well, most people would be. A lot of people would be.
Well, yeah, absolutely. So this is a few years later in 1993. So this is October 25th. Again, another 911 call. Nicole is actually divorced from OJ.
Yeah, living in another house.
Yeah, she's living in another house now, and he's paying her child support and alimony, which was quite a lot from what I remember reading. I didn't write the figures
it's relative
down,
to your earnings.
So
he was a very rich man. So, yeah, it would be very high.
Nicole is now divorced from OJ and living in a Brentwood rental home. So she's still in the same area. She calls 911 in an absolute panic, saying that OJ's outside in his white Bronco, shouting obscenities again. He's kicked down the back door. The 911 call lasts for about 15 minutes.
She sounds exasperated in this call. Panicked, not she.
No,
just
she just sounds
dumb.
Fed up.
Yeah, she's just
she's
done.
Yeah, it does sound like that, because a couple of quotes from the call that she says to the 911 dispatch. He's OJ Simpson. I think you know his record. Just send somebody over. Mm. Like, compared to the other 911 call, you're absolutely right. This one, she just sounds done. Yeah, whereas the first one, she was terrified. She was terrified on that first one.
Because there's a part on that call, this call we're talking about, where the operator asks her if he's been drinking or doing drugs. And she says, no, he's just crazy.
He's just crazy.
But it's the way she says it, like, just please take him away.
Yeah, yeah. She was pleading, weren't she? Just pleading with him. So police go there. And he is still there. And according to a police report, an official police report, he admitted to breaking the door down and took full responsibility for the replacement.
He literally kicked the door off its hinges. He literally kicked it in.
And she was really concerned about the kids upstairs, wasn't she? Because the kids were upstairs asleep. She said that multiple times on the 911 call to say that... The kids were upstairs.
There's a point there where you can hear him shouting.
Yeah,
when she's
there
saying
is.
That. And he says,
"He said, I've got a transcript actually. Go on, carry on."
So she'd been dating another guy. Mm. I can't remember what his name was. The dark-haired fella,
Keith
Stocky.
Or something.
Keith. And they'd had sex in the living room.
Yeah.
And then when they'd finished, they sort of went to the window, the curtains were undrawn, and he was outside. And they realised that he'd been watching. Because there's a point where she's saying she's worried about her kids, where he shouts through the door, you were just sucking another man's dick in the living room. Did you care about your kids then? Because I thought it was a weird thing to say. Like, of course you did. Sucking someone's dick doesn't make you stop caring about kids.
Yeah.
I hate my kids at the moment. It's a weird thing to say.
It is, yeah. Yeah. He says all kinds of things. And
how creepy, though, to, like,
it's
know
just
that.
So
like,
creepy.
She must have... I can understand why she felt like she was sounding so exhausted, though, because, like, you can't... She can't just live her life without thinking, is he somewhere? Is he there? Yeah. Is he going to kick off? Is he watching me? Is he... Yeah, you know, and when you have kids with someone, you like you're just not rid of them. You're tied to them forever.
Yeah. My commiserations. But the weird thing is, and this is true to all bullies and spousal abusers, when he went into the house where this Keith guy was there, he said to Nicole, "Oh, I need to talk to you on your own." And she said to Keith, "I think I need to just talk to him for a couple of minutes," and that he let him go off. And he said, "I could hear him shouting at her and being derogatory in the other room." But then when they came back in the room, he said, "Oh, I'm sorry, Keith. I'm just an emotional man." And he shook his hand in that because he didn't want none of that with another man. Because if you look at all of OJ's incidents, they are all with women.
All women. Yeah.
There's never an incident with a man. Never once.
Oh, that's
until
true, actually. I didn't.
Well, until
oh, well, yeah,
guy
until,
that happens
until Rob. Yeah, 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 knife. Until.
But he had a knife then, so.
Yeah, true.
That's interesting, that is.
Yeah, you're right.
Because she did, like, I don't know if you're going to get to this point, but, like, she would ring the police or take something so far. And I'm not saying that they obviously that half the time were just like, oh, no, it's just OJ, being OJ, silly OJ, slap on the wrist, off you go. But then sometimes she would like drop charges or whatever, and then kind of she'd remove him from her life, but then bring him back into her life. Like they split up at one point. Then she was like, actually, do you know what? I'm going to give it another go.
Yeah.
And I know this is very common in these kind of relationships, and it's just so sad because this is when it gets to the point where something really bad happens, like it did in this story.
Yeah. He convinced her he changed and was making steps forward because she insisted they date first.
She did.
And not go straight into a relationship again.
Yeah, she did.
But
and
it didn't take
long. I hate this thing about these kind of relationships because you have the other person, the other end, that has so much hope and faith that person that they fell in love with is there. And they're like, okay, yeah, like, I really want this to work, or, you know, for the kids, or, you know, lots of different reasons. And then it very rarely does, if ever.
Never,
and then it each time it just seems to get that bit worse though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because they've got that leeway. Escalates. They've got the, oh, she's not going to leave me. He was confident, yeah. I think, at that point. He was like, oh, yeah, you know. She's.
Yeah, I mean, nine incidents of domestic abuse.
Yeah.
You know, he's got no reason to think that, that time was going to be the last time.
Exactly. And it comes back to that untouchable thing again. Like,
does, yeah.
He's just, she won't leave him. The police won't arrest him. He's golden boy, isn't he?
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Golden boy is, I think that's a fair term.
Hi, it's Mike from the After Horror Podcast telling you to listen to the After Horror Podcast. It's four idiots who occasionally talk about the film that we're supposed to be, doing and stuff. Give it a listen. Or don't, I'm not your dad, but, I think you'd enjoy it.
Let's get on to the events of the 12th of June, 1994. So, Nicole has dinner with friends and family around 6:30 in the evening at a Brentwood restaurant, which is in her neighbourhood, which was the
a posh neighbourhood.
Really nice.
Very
neighborhood.
Upper class.
So it was the Mezza Luna restaurant, and this is where Ron Goldman works as a waiter. So Nicole. So her mother leaves her glasses, her eyeglasses, at the restaurant, and I think it's Ron that ends up bringing them to Ron, isn't it? Yeah,
because that, I was surprised at that, because I thought they were dating, but it wasn't that at all.
He simply
just took the glasses over there.
He did, he did, which is so unfortunate.
Oh, massively,
just incredibly unfortunate.
Yeah,
that
I saw an interview with his dad, and it was heartbreaking, because he wanted to open, Ron Goldman wanted to open a restaurant.
He was very, career-minded, wasn't he?
He
had
a
goal, Did he or did he not look like Ryan Gosling?
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
He really reminded me of Ryan Gosling. It was his eyes. He's got them small and too close together, yeah. He just looked like Ryan Gosling with black hair.
I love Ryan Gosling, though.
And me,
yeah.
Yeah, but his dad said when they went to his apartment after he sort all his stuff out and everything, he had all the blueprints he'd been working on for floor plans and menus and stuff. I just found that heartbreaking.
You could tell from what the documentary I saw how much his dad loved his son, though.
Yeah.
He fucking loved him.
Yeah, he was really breaking up, saying it. It was,
Oh,
Jesus. So, it was one of Nicole's sisters that calls the restaurant to say that the mother has left her glasses at the restaurant, and Ron Goldman volunteers to return the glasses. So, as this is happening, I'm gonna do a bit of a parallel thing. What's happening with Nicole and Ron, and what's happening with OJ at the same time, basically. So 9 to 9:30, Brian Kalin, a friend of OJ's, is staying at his guest
best
house.
Friend.
Oh, is it his best friend?
Oh no, wait, that was the other.
No,
guy,
that's AC.
That's it, AC, yeah.
That's Al Cowling.
That's the one, Al Cowling, yeah.
Yeah.
He was in love with OJ.
Oh, he worshipped
water. I mean, he was in love with OJ.
No, really?
I'm convinced of it.
I thought you were spitting facts there.
No. That's just my opinion. This is not the opinion of the Crimes Like These podcast.
Brian Kalin, he's staying at OJ's house in his guest house, and they go to McDonald's for dinner. Because why not?
Well,
they got money. They can afford it.
Yeah. So between 9:45 to 9:50, Ron Goldman leaves the restaurant with the white envelope containing Nicole's mother's glasses.
As a glasses wearer, I found that really cool. because you're not going to get smudges on them if they're
they're not going to smudge or anything. I think that's great. And that just shows like how much care.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean? Like that's really thoughtful, really thoughtful. Yeah. Quarter past 10. While watching television, a neighbor of Nicole's, Pablo Fenefez, I'm going to say that, hears the constant barking of a dog. Remember that, 10:15. So around 10:25, a limousine arrives at OJ's house. 10:40, Kaylin, this is Brian Kaylin, who he went to McDonald's with. He hears three loud thumps on the outside wall of his room where he's staying at OJ's.
Enough to shake the picture on the wall.
Yeah, yeah, that must have been some bloody thump, tell ya. So between 10:40 and 10:50, Alan Park is the limousine driver, incidentally. He buzzes the intercom several times but doesn't get a response. So he's obviously calling for OJ to go wherever.
I think he's going to Chicago for some sort of golf.
He is going to Chicago. Oh, was it golf?
Yeah, it was some golf tournament that he was hosting or something.
Right. So 5 to 11, Alan Park, the limo driver, calls his boss and says that OJ's not home, and he's told to wait until 11:15 because Simpson is always late. That's what he said to him.
Rude.
Rude. So around 11 p.m., so this is, 5 minutes later, he sees Alan Park, the limo driver, he sees a black person around 6 feet tall and 200 pounds walking across the driveway to the house.
Worth noting, too, that OJ was the only black man that owned a house in Brentwood.
Yeah.
That's a fact, by the way.
Incidentally. Yeah. Incidentally. Yeah, absolutely. It's a valid point. It's a fact. So Brian goes to the front of the house. So this is the friend to check on the noise. He sees the limousine driver at the gate. And several seconds later, Alan Park buzzes again at the intercom. And OJ answers this time. So this is around 11:15. OJ says that he's overslept, but he's just got out of the shower. Simpson puts his bags in the limousine. They go to LAX, which is the airport. They arrive at the airport about 11:35. So they're not that far away from the airport. 15-minute drive, something like that.
A miracle in LA.
Absolute miracle driving.
Yeah, I've never been there, but I've always heard that traffic's just terrible. It took 2 hours to get everywhere.
Yeah, basically, yeah. We all saw La La Land, the opening shot of the freeway, right? I imagine that's what it's like.
People dancing on cars, definitely.
Absolutely, yeah. Perfectly in sync with one another, yeah. 11:45, OJ leaves on an American Airlines flight to Chicago. Then at 12:10 a.m., so 10 past midnight, basically. The bodies of Nicole Brown and Ron Goldman are discovered outside the townhouse.
A horrific crime scene.
Let's rewind a little bit. The neighbours obviously alerted by the dog, but that was at like 10:15.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he does anything about it. I don't think he calls the police or anything like that. I didn't find anything to say that he alerted anybody. He just sort of like noted that, he heard the dog barking.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't call the police for a barking dog, I don't know.
No.
Don't think that's unusual.
No. Oh, yeah. It's actually Nicole's dog that leads the neighbours to the bodies, which are near the gate to the property.
Yeah, inside the porch.
It's the porch, isn't it? It's like there's like a path and a bit of a like sort a of like covered garden.
Yeah.
So OJ at this point, so he's on a flight to Chicago, and he arrives in Chicago and checks into his hotel at about 4:15 a.m. 4:30 a.m., police arrive at OJ's Rockingham mansion, which I'm assuming is L.A.
Incidentally, just to inform the next of kin, which is him, not the suspect.
Yeah, this is to inform him of Nicole's death. Obviously, he's not there, but they do discover his white Ford Bronco that has bloodstains on it, and a bloody glove that matches one that was found near Ron Goldman's body.
It's fucking glove.
It's all it hinged on, though, wasn't it?
There's some shady shit with that glove.
What do you mean?
Well, they, later on, they accuse one of the police officers of planting it.
Yeah, they do.
Which is possible, considering his track record.
I mean, we'll get into the mishandling of the evidence and whatnot in the next episode. But yeah, I agree. So at 10:45 a.m., so this is still the same day, the police have now got a search warrant to search OJ's mansion. They find even more blood traces in the property and more on the Bronco. Incidentally, he had two white Broncos. There was the one with the bloodstains on that they find at the mansion, but the car chase one is a different car.
Yeah.
So obviously we know AC was driving the Bronco in the car chase because OJ was in the back, and the other one was impounded for evidence. So there's two Ford white Bronco. Why would you have two of the same car? I'm assuming one was OJ's and one was AC's.
Yeah, we could drive one while the other one's getting washed.
Oh,
so you'd never not have to.
I really hope that isn't the reason that he's got two of them. I really hope so.
He bought two, one for Nicole, one for him. I don't know. I never really thought that.
I didn't know
there were two until now, honestly.
Yeah. There was two.
I love those, by the way.
And me.
Bronco.
And me.
I love those. Yeah.
I'd love a big truck like that.
Yeah.
I'd look silly driving
me
it.
Me too.
I'd just be like two hands on a steering wheel like this. Need a booster seat. 12 p.m. So this is midday. OJ comes home, and he's handcuffed and he's taken to a police station where he is questioned for a number of hours.
Yeah. When they searched his house, several police officers commented on the fact that inside was full of pictures of OJ and none of the rest of the family.
Just absolute narcissistic behaviour. Just like, what?
Yep. Yeah. Just pictures of OJ everywhere.
Or him with like famous people. Yeah. Just him. Yeah. None of his family.
None of his children.
Nope. But him with like famous people. Like actors and politicians. Yeah,
and a lot of them weren't even like famous as in celebrity, as in like talent. They were like famous businessmen because he was balls deep in that world.
Just so
that's
weird.
Fucking mental. Wow. So at this point, so this is June 15th, 1994, Robert Shapiro becomes OJ's first attorney, shall we say. And takes it. Actually, no, he replaced Howard Weitzman, I think. Robert Shapiro becomes lead counsel for Simpson. June 16th, 1994, Nicole and Ron's funerals. Jesus, just, I mean, that's not long, really, is it? A few days, like 3 days.
Yeah. I tell you what, also, it's certainly not long enough for OJ to show up at the wake.
Oh, my God.
No, not really. Not really.
But he did.
He did. Of course he fucking did. Why would he not?
That's disgraceful.
It is. And then that moves us nicely onto June 17th, 1994. And this is when it all goes down. So originally, OJ promised to surrender to the authorities.
At a press conference.
At a press conference. I mean, people thought that he was dead. Did you hear what that lawyer said? Yeah. So OJ had written this note. Go and find this on YouTube because it does read like a suicide
note.
Yeah,
it does.
It really fucking does.
I'm sure it was intended to.
I mean,
what better way to elicit sympathy?
People were up in arms because they thought he was dead. People were crowding the house and everything. The media was there. A detective had to come out and say, he's not dead. We don't know where he is. And go and have a watch of that press conference. It's insane. OJ flees and basically becomes a fugitive.
Oh, this is embarrassing. I actually find this embarrassing.
What do you mean, the slowest car chase in history?
It is the slowest car chase in history.
The fact that he'd done it, the fact he was like saying he was going to kill himself. Yeah. Like
It was attention. Yeah, I think he just wanted attention. I know. I agree. I don't disagree with you.
Don't do it, people. Yeah.
It's just a really bad affair all around, really.
So everybody and his dog are out looking for OJ. Everybody. The news, everybody. They've got multiple choppers in the air just looking for this white Bronco and OJ. And 911 get a call from a lady who says that she had seen him. She got the license plate. She said she looked OJ dead in his face, and she said that he looked at her like death, basically. She said something that wasn't verbatim, but she says something along those lines. And she says it was definitely him on I-5 heading north in a white Bronco.
Yeah. Hard to be a fugitive when you're that well known.
Slightly. Exactly. OJ is in the back and AC is driving.
I didn't know that until the last couple of days.
Oh, see,
I just assumed OJ was driving up until
now. No. He was in the back with a gun to his head because AC ends up phoning 911 and he's practically crying like a little bitch on the phone.
Because he's going, in love with OJ.
Oh my God, he's got a gun to his head. I need the cops to back off and all this absolute shit. Yeah. Just unbelievable phone call. But AC is driving northbound on the I-5 at 60 mile an hour for 2 hours. Very slowly.
He's sticking to the speed limit. I respect
he is sticking to the speed limit. That's true. And AC, he's saying to the 911 operator that he just wants to talk to his mum. He wants to go to his mum's house. He needs to speak to his mum and all of this. And it was just like a desperate plea for help.
Yeah.
And for the cops to back off. Yeah. And obviously the cops ain't going to do that. They're not going to do that.
Although what they did do is they stayed well back.
They were still there. They'd got the chopper on him.
But I heard a lot of people, like high up people all over the place at the time, particularly, were saying if this had been any other black man, they would have rammed him off the road.
Yeah.
They'd have rammed him clear off the road.
They'd have done the old hit maneuver or the stinger, anything.
But also, you can see it from their point of view. The man was sitting in the back of the car with a gun to his own head.
Let's talk about the people on the side of the road with the signs cheering him on.
Yeah, free OJ.
Free OJ, he's innocent, and just all his fans just collectively banding together in support of him, saying how much they love him and
how much support he had.
It was disgusting. It
would be the exact opposite today.
It would, yeah. I think.
I mean, look at Aaron Hernandez. Look what happened with him.
Yeah. yeah, that's true. So yeah, 2-hour car chase on the freeway. OJ eventually goes back home and he goes into his house.
Drama queen.
He has a glass of orange juice and calms the fuck down. Yeah.
Juice.
And phones his mom.
Yeah. I mean, that's after the, because they do arrest him at the truck. They take
they
him
do.
Inside
yeah,
the
they
house,
do. Yeah. Yeah, they take him
because there's a
the
long
house,
standoff when he gets to his house.
Yeah, because he doesn't come out of the car, does he? AC gets out and he's kind of like going between the house and the car.
Yeah, he's basically being a mediator.
He's being a mediator, yeah.
When OJ does finally step out of the vehicle, because there's SWAT teams surrounding the snipers on the roof and everything.
Yeah.
He's got two pictures that he's clutching.
Yes,
of Nicole and his kids, and he's got a gun underneath the pictures, just rested on his chin. What a cowardly way out.
Just, it's the victim thing, isn't it?
Yeah,
it is, yeah.
Like, acting bravado bullshit. Like, he's got no pictures in his house of Nicole, ironically, carrying one around.
Yeah, especially made for this occasion.
Yeah,
I bet he was in both pictures.
Probably, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
The picture of Nicole was actually just a picture of him. She was in the background. It's the only one he had.
He turns up at his house about 9 p.m. I think the 911 call from the member of the public comes in at about 6:45. And he ends up at home about 9 p.m. Incidentally, it's estimated that 95 million people watched that pursuit.
It's mad, isn't it?
For 2 hours and
I'd have
nothing.
It. I'd have been one of them.
Nothing happened.
I'd have been one
I would
of
have
them.
As well. I would.
I was watching the Royal Moat thing till like 3 a.m.
So OJ is arrested and thrown in jail. Without bail, and that rhymes, and I love it.
Yeah. Although not without trying.
No,
like the judge, one of the judges wanted to give him bail. They said, "Oh, you know, he can't go anywhere," which is true to a point. He's so famous; like, where could he have hidden?
Yeah.
But on the same hand, you don't give people have done that bail. Really, we shouldn't.
No. Incidentally, just skipping back, I do have Nicole Brown's autopsy report with a list of injuries.
Yes. This murder was horrendously brutal.
Horrific, horrific.
So brutal.
Trigger warning for graphic descriptions of a corpse. Let's just say that. So, incised wound of neck. Transection of left and right common carotid arteries. So that's your big
that's
neck
why there
vein,
was so
innit?
Much blood at the scene.
Oh yeah, it was
so much.
It was just covered everywhere.
It's
everywhere.
Probably the bloodiest crime scene I've ever seen, and I've seen a lot of crime scenes.
Yeah. Incisions left and right internal jugular veins. Again, that's your big neck vein.
Yeah, so this is essentially just multiple stabs to the neck.
Oh, yeah. Transection of thyroid membrane, epiglottis and hypopharynx, whatever that is. I don't know. This is a medical report. I should have Googled this. incision to cervical spine. Multiple stab wounds of neck and scalp, a total of 7. Multiple injuries of hands, including incised wound, ring finger of right hand, which was considered a defence wound.
Yeah, I was going to say, they're defensive, aren't they?
And she had bruising to her scalp.
Because she was hit, wasn't she?
She was. Yeah, I think she was punched in the head, weren't she? Jesus. Yeah. So, yeah, there was that. I
apologise if you can hear the helicopter. I've got the police helicopter currently buzzing right above my house.
Is there a British OJ on the...
It's gotten real meta in here.
Yeah. The autopsy is like 11 pages long. I can send you a link to it if you want to read it. It's very technical.
I saw pictures. Nah. That was enough.
I saw pictures as well.
Yeah, the pictures.
I wish I had a Google. Very.
One of the most graphic, because sometimes crime scene photos are quite hard to find somewhere.
And Ron as well, like his wounds just...
He just does not come up at all, does he? Other than the fact that he's there and dead.
No,
which is horrible, really. And his, like, there was a phrase in the documentary that I watched, and it actually, like, made me shudder, where they said that basically, like, the space slash position in which he was killed in, he was basically, it was like a kill cage.
Yeah.
He was, like, surrounded by, like, metal gating.
And then, like, he couldn't get out. Stuff. Yeah.
So if he literally just didn't stand a chance against...
Nope.
Person that killed him.
Nope.
You just backed into a corner. Imagine being backed. Yeah. Honestly, I think my brain was just literally like so horrified, but it's like, because it was so such a visual sentence. It was like being backed into a corner. There's no escape and you're just being hacked at. Like, you are fucked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, on top of everything else, even without that, it would, most people, unless you're like, really fucked. You've got a 6'2", 280-pound psychopath with a knife.
Yeah,
yeah.
You've got very little chance.
I'm assuming he used the knife because he didn't want to attract attention with a gun.
Yeah.
And he wanted to get up close and personal, I guess, because it's... I don't want to say crime. I don't want to say crime of passion because that's not a thing.
That's the technical term for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, I agree with you. The wording is fucking awful for that.
It's terrible, terrible.
But yeah, that is what it's called.
Yeah. So yeah, he's arrested, thrown in jail without bail, July 22nd, 1994. OJ pleads not guilty. And we are gonna leave it there. Fun fact: the Bronco from the chase. Is in a museum.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Is it?
Did you see what else was in the museum, though?
What?
There's another car at the museum.
Who?
So, hang on. So, the white Ford Bronco that was in the chase
other white Ford Bronco?
No, one knows where the one with the blood on him.
Sitting on a lot of money there.
We don't know where that is. But
auctioned
the chase,
off a police auction.
Yeah, probably. The Chase Bronco is in it's at the Alcatraz East Crime Museum, which is in Tennessee. There is also another true crime vehicle there.
It's Ted Bundy's.
It is Bundy's.
It's Mini.
It's his Beetle.
A Beetle, sorry. I meant, I'm not a car person. A little car.
He had two, apparently. He had two Beetles. And one of them, and one of them is in that same museum as the Bronco.
Cool. Wow.
Yeah. You know, sometimes with situations like that, when you're in a museum and you're like, this is the car he killed people. And then you read the plaque and it says, this is a car he owned when he was 17 for 6 months.
I know, yeah.
That
morbid sick side of you is really disappointing. Yeah. You're like, I wanted to see the kill car, for God's sake.
The kill car.
It's like one of the saddest days of my life was the day I went to the British History Museum as an adult and realised that nothing in this fucking real.
Oh, is it all like replicas?
It's such a bummer. It's all replicas, Nearly everything in there is a replica.
Oh, that's boring.
Bundy's car, going back, I know this isn't a Bundy episode, but Bundy's car should be like actually hailed a hero because that's the reason he got fucking found. Like, there was just a serial killer on the loose, blah, blah, blah. If it wasn't for his car, like it was one of his lights was out, I think, wasn't it, or something? And then like the description of the car bore. He would have carried on killing for ages after that. That car is a hero.
Never thought I'd hear
the police that. Were absolutely fucking useless in that case. It was the car. Yeah. The car solved the case.
It's got its own spin-off series. Detective Car.
Yeah. Sold the rights to the book and the movie and everything. Yeah. Yeah, so we're going to pick it up on the next episode, which is going to be episode 51, which will be out in a couple of weeks' time. And we're going to discuss the trial and the rest of OJ's rap sheet, shall we say, because
by God, it's a long one.
I feel like we're very tangenty and quite trippy on a normal episode, but how trippy this story gets even after the trial, I just think that it's going to be one of our weirdest episodes yet.
I feel like we say that about every episode, but you know, I completely agree with you.
You know, we need to start this episode off with OJ's first ever tweet. Hello, Twitter world. I like that he chimed in on the Gabby Potato thing as well, didn't he?
Did he?
Oh, yeah.
Cheeky bastard.
He had a lot to say about that.
Cheeky fucking bastard.
Yeah, he had a lot to say about that.
Oh, my God.
Worth looking it up on YouTube.
Wow.
Oh, I assume we're going to discuss the book in the next episode.
Yes, we will. we'll leave the book to that because that comes after.
Is that on Audible? Because I might actually get that.
Really?
I don't know, actually. That's probably a good shout.
Because if I might listen to that before the next episode.
I've got a free trial to use, so that might be getting used. See if it's on Audible. It's a good shout.
Again, we're so good at this content business.
Yeah.
We're just looking on our phones now.
Amazing.
Oh, I've got credit. That's good.
My gosh. Amazing. So, yeah, that's been part one.
Oh, it's on there. It's on there.
Yes!
Is it on there?
Oh, yeah, my free trial's getting used. Brilliant.
Who's the narrator?
Oh, yeah, who's the narrator?
Oh, I wish it was him. Narrated by Kim Goldman, Pablo Fengives, and G. Valmont.
Oh, okay.
Wait, what? And
Kim Goldman? Huh. I feel like I know that name.
So this is not written by OJ?
No, he designed the book, didn't he?
Yeah, it's written by the Goldman family.
He said that, yeah, like he said.
Oh, as in Ron?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's
so
interesting.
I have
the impression he wrote it.
Have you finished the documentary for it? Goes, it does go into
no, it. I've still three episodes left, I think.
It will go into this. And then obviously, I don't want to go into it now, so I'll leave it for the next episode. But it comes to like what happened there with the book.
Oh, good. Because, all this time I thought he wrote that.
Oh, I'll give the documentary a watch as well then.
Oh, God, it's so long.
Really good. Like, if you want a more in-depth view on all the background and everything that was happening at the time as well.
Yeah.
And it's a great documentary on Disney, isn't it? Disney Plus.
Actually, the first two episodes, the most interesting part about them is the riots in Watts and what caused all the racial tension and stuff.
Was that the Rodney King thing?
Kind of before that, but yeah, the Rodney King.
Oh, was it before
King
that?
Really
okay.
Kicked that off. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Awesome. Excellent. And on that note, listeners. Oh,
I've got a couple of recommendations. They're both true crime ones and both on Netflix. One of them is on Discovery Plus. Mm-hmm. So it's The Curious Case of Natalia Grace.
Oh, you've been talking about this in the chat, haven't you?
Oh my God, I'm so fucking obsessed with this show, right? So you know the film Orphan.
Yes.
This is
the true story.
Well, it's not really, no.
Okay.
The film came out at the same sort of time this was going on.
Right.
But it is so similar, it's terrifying.
Oh, really?
And I'd heard the story and I was like, oh my God, this grown adult is pretending to be a child and now she's threatening the family. Oh, it's not that at all.
Really?
Really, it's the parents.
What?
She really was 7 years old when they adopted her. Like, there's absolutely no doubt in it. Dentists, doctors, they all aged her. It's all lies from this couple. But
I'm intrigued now.
It's one of the most crazy documentaries I've ever seen. And it's worth watching just for this father. Just for the father. He is off his head crazy. It's insane watching him. There's this one bit where he demonstrates how his wife beat Natalia. And he is in an interview, and he gets up off of his chair, and he gets his actor. He's doing all this, and then he just gets on the floor and just starts punching the floor and screaming as hard as he can. Then he gets up and he's all dramatic, going, "Oh, it's unbelievable! Honestly, it's unbelievable."
What the fuck?
It's fucking mental. You'll go into it.
Okay.
I was, up until like the third or fourth episode, I was thinking, oh man, she's like a little psychopath. But then it opens up into this whole other thing. And
I'm intrigued.
It's so mad.
I am intrigued.
And the other one is a new documentary. I think it might have just come on there today, called American Nightmare.
I almost watched this the other day, and then I ended up watching something else. I can't remember what I watched.
I've started it.
Oh, it's another completely fucking insane story.
Yeah, I've started it. Not that much through it, to be fair.
Oh, I know what so I watched. I watched Leave the World Behind.
That's brilliant. I really enjoyed
it. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
The ending is bonkers, but
loved
sure.
it. I loved it.
I did enjoy it, even though it was bonkers. I was like, this is how it's ending.
I love an ambiguous ending.
I do as well.
And of course, they could just go, if they make a sequel, they could just pick up where they left off.
I know it's the same guy that did Mr. Robot, and I watched that, so I kind of knew what to expect.
Yeah, I've only seen the first season of Mr. Robot, but brilliant. Don't know why I didn't carry on with it.
Yeah, it's really good. Oh, thanks for the recommendation.
Yeah, it's all right.
And on that note, listeners, always remember to delete your Google history.